So we're in. I don't know what episode this is, but we're recording it in the car, which is why it might be a little bit shaky. But we've just come back off a storytelling retreat with Chris Holland. So we're just going to talk a little bit about that and what it was like. What did you think? What did you reckon? Was it what you thought it was going to be?
I think it was less kind of teacherly than I thought it was going to be, which is actually good.
Right.
So I guess I imagined there might be like, here are a few ways to do this.
Do you know what? I think that's what I was expecting too. I think I was expecting maybe a more... I don't want to say classical, but more of an approach that was like, oh, here is a technique for adding detail to a story. Okay, try that for 2 minutes. Okay, yeah. Here is a technique for adding suspense. Try that for 2 minutes. When actually it was much more, I guess, practice-based.
Yeah.
Lots of telling whole stories start to finish. And different things. It was a very small group, wasn't it?
Yeah. Which I liked. You really felt like you got to know the people that you were with through listening to a story that they'd chosen, or two stories they'd chosen. And I think it was an ideal size. There were how many? Six of us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Including Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, I wonder if in a larger group, Chris would have altered it to be much more kind of, okay, we're only going to hear 5 minutes of your story, you know, just that sort of larger group might have necessitated more timekeeping. But it was nice to hear stories, and even that, so some of the exercises were, okay, tell your story in 2 minutes, okay, now shrink it down to 1 minute, and even those, I think it would have been deeply unsatisfying if he had stopped hard at a minute.
Yeah.
But he kind of went, that's your minute, let them get the rest of the story out. Which actually, as a story, as the one telling a story, I felt really grateful for that, because I was kind of like, no, I need to get this out of me. I felt really strongly like I needed to get to a resolution. And quite often I was quite, by the end of the minute or the 2 minutes, I was actually reasonably close. Like, I didn't have much more to add to my stories, but it was like almost the, not punchline, but the final, like, and that's why he, you know, and having that taken out would have been very frustrating.
Yeah. Stepping back a little bit and looking at the wider picture, like, why do you think that storytelling is considered so important at Forest School? Obviously not every Forest School practitioner is going to use storytelling, but so many of us do, and in a way that's quite random. Why, you know, what is your opinion about why it's used so much and why it's so important?
I think if you're very honest with yourself, storytelling is actually how you communicate far more of the time than we possibly realise. That possibly we think of telling a story as telling a story. You know, you sit down and once upon a time and that's the story. But actually, storytelling can be what, you know, oh, guys, why are you digging that hole? And then they go, oh, well, we were doing this and then this happened. And then that is telling a story. That is storytelling, or how you explain. So
that actually occurred to me as well. And I thought about how you and I waste so much time waffling with one another.
Yeah.
Because that's how we converse. You know, I think some people, I think we all do it. I think you and I both will go, oh, this thing happened at the weekend. Oh, but before I tell you that, you need to know the backstory of that person. Because do you remember that person that I told you about? That was the thing about the thing about the thing and that thing. Anyway, that's, you know, and given half a chance, you and I would just do that for ages and not actually do anything else.
Yeah.
And when you sort of realise that, then it helps, I think, with a sense of performance of storytelling, in inverted commas. So you can feel less nervous and less pet up about doing it, because you realise you do it all the time. Like, that's how we
talk
to our friends and family.
It is how you explain, is you tell someone about your day, and it is also how you tell someone about this prince's day from a thousand years ago and where he went, or you know, all those things. So I think that's why I think it's an important skill and possibly an underappreciated skill. And I think we all know people, maybe subconsciously, who tell a good story of their own life. You know, you do know some people who you go, oh, I could just listen to them talk for hours, and they know that. And I wonder if that's where I thought we were going to be taught more, oh, this is how you structure it and hold off things like this until the end and those things. Maybe that's more public speaking as opposed to storytelling, which doesn't have as many rules and is a little bit more freeform.
I kind of think that even if, I think you probably could go down the rules and structuring sort of road of storytelling training, but that wasn't, first of all, that wasn't kind of what, like,
I don't think that was his intent.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, and with hindsight, I think it's better not to do that because, especially if you're feeling a bit nervous or underconfident, if you're trying to remember, oh, but no, I didn't adhere to the rule of, like, leaving something out to the end.
I didn't do threes.
Or pausing or whatever. Yeah. Oh, God, I failed. And actually, it's about you and what you're comfortable with and how you tell a story. And you've got to discover your own style, haven't you? And you can only really do that through practice. And so something like that, which is very enabling and just encourages you to just go for it and learn new stories. It doesn't take you that long. I like that in the afternoon.
Yeah.
We had to choose a story from a book that Chris had bought lots of books. And you just had to choose a story that was relatively short and appealed to you. We didn't really have long to choose it. And then learn it, tell it in 2 minutes, tell it in 1 minute, and then tell it again at the end in full. And it showed you, really, that was a couple of hours.
I mean, not even that.
Inside of that, we made a storyboard. Yeah.
And you're listening to
lots of other people's stories too. So,
do you know what? I found it. I don't know if you were aware that I was doing it, but whenever the opportunity came up, I was trying to tell my story first because I found it very difficult to listen, knowing I was going to sort of go next or go in a few.
Yeah.
You know, I found myself not fully appreciating other people's stories because I was going, oh God, maybe I should do that, and maybe I'll say that, and then and analysing theirs in a way, not of appreciating it, but going like, oh, she had a little rhyme in hers. Oh, I wonder if there's a rhyme I could do in mine. And I'm having this thought spiral and not actually paying attention to her. So I was trying to go like, I just want mine out of the way so that I can then listen effectively, I think, for me. Do you think there's anything that you are immediately like, oh, we're going to go and do that straight away on Monday when we're back in?
I really loved using musical instruments for not just adding effects during the story, but also as a signal that the story was starting or ending. It's much nicer than going, I'm going to tell a story, everybody, if you want to listen, which is what I normally do, and probably I will carry on doing that at the same time as making some kind of sound effect, which I haven't decided yet, but
an enormous gong.
But then hopefully the enormous gong will just take over and I won't have to do that anymore. And also I think that one of my questions that I kind of wanted answering was like having trouble with endings of stories.
Right.
So I always feel a bit of an icky kind of, you know, just as the story settles, and if you're an audience member, it doesn't feel icky, it feels perfectly normal to just sit there quietly for a bit and absorb the story. But as the teller, I always feel a bit like, and that's the end, you know, and I always sort of fill that silence with a bit of like, it's finished now, and that was always a bit rubbish. Whereas if you had a little
musical thing, it suddenly drops all your confidence that you've been very confident telling this story, and then
it's like taking the mask off.
Isn't it?
I'm back to me again. And if there was some sort of little musical thing, perhaps that would help that transition.
Yeah, I think
it's a bit like your poncho, isn't it? You take your poncho off.
I do, yeah. We should explain that more. I have a big black and white, you know, it's a Glastonbury poncho, basically, thick, heavy thing. And it initially I was doing it for it wasn't for anybody else other than me. It was like, I need to have this mask so that I can, I don't know, there are things, you know, you hold in your head about yourself, and maybe I didn't feel like Lewis could be silly and could do girly voices and things, but I put the poncho on so that I could be like, oh, I'm a storyteller right now.
Yeah.
And actually it's now become a thing where just putting the poncho on for a lot of our groups is enough that they go, oh, Lewis can tell a story. And I don't feel like I need it for the same reasons. It's now shifted to a point where it is like you say, a musical signal.
Yeah,
I think it was very interesting that we kind of, I would say without meaning to necessarily, lots of our stories that we chose to tell to each other ended up down a folky route, down an ancient or a folky or a fable-y kind of route. There weren't many, and I was wondering through today if there's a reason that we don't tell modern stories with the same effect, you know, because it would still be a story if you recounted an episode of EastEnders. I mean, content-wise, that would be inappropriate for children. But do you know what I mean? It seems as though almost we're using time to distance it. You know, we don't tell many stories about a boy who lived in a tower block of flats, and you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was kind of I found that quite interesting that we're with the maybe in commas the art of storytelling is drawn more to the ancient and the old and the fantasy world.
Yeah, well, that's what we tell our children, you know, fairy tales and things like that as well, isn't it?
I wonder if they've always felt old. I wonder if, you know, 1,000 years ago, whether a fairy story still felt like a story from a long time ago.
I reckon it does, yeah. Yeah, I reckon it did. A lot of them do have a natural element to them, don't they? Which I guess ties in with Forest School in terms of you are outdoors, you are in a woodland setting, which is quite timeless as well, isn't it? You're not surrounded by anything that reminds you, apart from what we're wearing or bring with us. The landscape is the same when you're in a woodland.
A woodland that we look at today looks like a woodland that, you know, Prince whatever was looking at in the story.
And it almost sort of throws us back to an older time where we had more of an oral storytelling tradition, so it does somehow fit, I think, to be telling stories outdoors in the woods.
I'm wondering now whether storytelling with a natural connection, you know, lots of the stories we have are about the importance of beech nuts or you know, this is what hazel can do, or this is, and I wonder if those are almost the equivalent between you can get to know a person over a very long time, or you can shortcut it if somebody who already knows them tells you a story about them. And so we're shortcutting that relationship with the children to be like, okay, you will eventually, I hope, develop a relationship with this oak tree, but let me tell you a story about it to shortcut that relationship. You know, it's a bit like, let me tell you about John. And then when you meet John, you've already got this thing. Yeah. So when you meet the oak trees, you've then already got this, I know about, I've heard a story about you. You know.
Absolutely.
It is a
so it's like a teaching tool, and probably has been always in the past, you know, about the natural qualities of things and
it's a way of passing it down.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily sterile, and the oak bark is this thick and you know, and maybe innately we as humans worked out a long time ago that stories are easier to remember than facts and methods, and particularly before writing was commonplace, the best way to remember things and to pass things on was through storytelling.
Yeah. We were talking a bit today about how storytelling influences or sort of expands children's play as well, so it feels good to be storytelling in that oral tradition at Forest School, and then seeing where that might spark children's imaginations, maybe not even that session, but in the future, in terms of things that they might role play or ways
to
their imagination or take them as a
some of the guilt that you might feel of a story not having a neatly tied up and a bow ending.
Yeah.
Because you can feel, you might not feel it immediately, but when the kids run off and immediately go off and build the den and either reenact something from the story or take something from the story and metaphorically run with it, you can feel like, oh, okay, the story didn't have an ending because it hasn't ended.
Yeah.
It is still going with them. I think there is something that feels very old in Forest School about connecting it with a... I think maybe because a lot of the physical skills that you do in Forest School, like, you know, the bushcraft side of things, could otherwise be referred to as primitive and very...
Yeah.
As is the buzzword, recapitulative.
Yes.
You know, we're exploring earlier evolutions of mankind's history.
Yeah.
And storytelling is one of the earliest and most persistent elements of, you know, our history. And I wonder whether also there's an element of maybe telling stories to help children practice listening.
Oh yeah.
And that is not a skill that children naturally, well, some children do naturally listen, but it's almost, you know, for some children listening is very, sitting and listening and taking on information is very difficult, and so it's kind of a, oh okay, well this is a way you can sit and take it in and
rest and recharge as well. That's all kind of connecting to our previous podcast about kind of rhythm and the flow of a session. There, sometimes, and we were talking about that, weren't we, last time, about feeling it, like feeling the energy of the group and going, ah, oh, this is a storytelling moment.
Yes.
And going, this is, the group actually needs that right now for whatever reason, whether it is a physical rest and sit down from whatever active stuff they've been doing, or whether it is a need for that kind of cozy hygge type feeling of sitting around a fire and sharing.
Hygge, very on brand. Well, I was, well, you actually, it sparked something there, you saying they need a hygge, and actually that's made me think as well. We talked today about children needing a safe way to experience peril and experiences in life, and like you learn from watching an older sibling do things, I think with a lot of stories the hope is that rather than having to make all of our own mistakes, we can watch Mr. Fox make a bad mistake with his friends.
That's Aristotle, you know that? That's Aristotle. Yeah. So Aristotle's theory is that we need stories, we need drama, because we are, we not only imitate one another, and that's how we've learned through our evolution, but also we have the ability to empathise to such an extent that we will either watch or hear a story about somebody doing something, and we will feel that we have done that too. So it's the ultimate learning tool that enables us to develop further, and obviously, like, on a long scale of evolution, but also on a short scale of somebody's life, that you've heard a story about something. Not, you just haven't just listened and it's washed off of you. You've inhabited it and you've been that person for a bit. You have that ability to put yourself in the character's shoes.
Yeah. A little bit like some schools occasionally use for PHSE can use puppets, and puppets can experience, I mean, puppets can be a good storytelling addition as well, but this idea that whether intentionally or unintentionally, you might have a child who is experiencing, I don't know, a grandparent might have died, or some other kind of let's just say bereavement as a general feeling, and if you tell a story that involves bereavement, they can empathise really, but also they can possibly, that they couldn't do to themselves, they can suggest to a puppet or to a character, oh, she should try saying goodbye to her grandma. Like, they would never say that to them, you know.
Yeah.
They couldn't necessarily verbalise themselves, like, I'd like to say goodbye to grandma, but they might be able to listen to a story or see a puppet and go, I think she'll want to do that with, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there's also social stories, aren't there, which are of help for autistic children. Yes, so on a very, you know, turning it into a simple story about something that is challenging or something that's important, is a way of helping that person to front or acknowledge situation.